coming up on Thunder Pop.
Showtime. We're here. Episode 131 of the Thunder Pop podcast, also Thunder Pop Live. Well, not our 131st Thunder Pop Live, but it is our 131st show. Okay. I'm Stephen Presley. I'm joined by the one and only Jazz One. One's up.
Oh, yeah. Throw your ones up, y'all.
In the Thunder Pop Dome, today on this 131st episode, as I still continue to train myself to look at the camera, we're going to start off with reviewing the trailer once again, this time to talk about a retro review in the trailer. So not just a review in the trailer, but a retro edition of review in the trailer, Jazz One. We're going to go back to the 1990s for... I changed my camera angle there. We're going to the 1990s, all the way back to 1997. Do you remember where you were in 1997, sir?
I hadn't moved to Austin yet.
You had not moved to Austin yet?
Yes. I still lived back home in Louisiana.
Back in Louisiana, were you wearing the stovepipe jeans, the wide leg of the 90s?
I will neither confirm nor deny that.
Okay. I got you. I can confirm... And I was, and also agree that it was a terrible idea, but I did have it.
Luckily, we didn't have cameras on our phones back then.
Exactly. So we're going to do a retro review in the trailer on this 131st episode, where we're going to talk about the Nick Fury TV movie from 1997 that was Nick Fury, not Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agent.
Smaller budget.
Oh, yeah. Put all the agents. They got one, not all of them.
He's freelance.
Yeah, exactly. Very interesting. They made this pilot. It was good. They were thinking about it for a TV show, and this was the TV movie for the short-lived version of Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. But just think, if that had been a hit, would that have started the Marvel Universe on television in the 90s, and could have very well have kept the current Marvel Universe from happening when it did? I mean, would you have had who else would have been in that? They would have had like some other TV star. Don Johnson would have been Tony Stark, and who else from the TV world? Heather Locklear would have probably been Black Widow. I'm going back to who was like around in 1997 on television that were kind of big stars. I don't know. We can brainstorm.
Paul Rudd would be like Doctor Strange.
Something crazy like that. Yeah, it would be a ridiculous cast. Kirk Cameron, I don't know, playing Thanos. I don't know. Didn't have a weird casting, but I get to cast it, so I'll put whoever I want in there as Thanos. Okay, well, we're going to do a review in the trailer. Then, following that, we have Baby Yoda. As you can see there at the top corner of Jazz One's screen, we're going to be talking Mandalorian Season 2, first two episodes, and it's going to be full of spoilers. So stand by if you're trying to avoid spoilers. Stand by for that, because we'll be doing a spoiler-filled look back at the first two episodes of Season 2, and we're so excited about those two episodes and talking about them. Then we'll have our usual tropes, agree or disagree, thoughts and advice, all of that, and a bag of chips with the dip on this episode of Thunder Pop. And then let's go to the opening credits.
A dip, you dip.
Thunder Pop. It's time for Thunder Pop. Don't make me say it.
Okay, I lied.
Thunderpop! 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 Oh, Thunderpop!
Yeah!
Oh, yeah!
We're here. You know, I don't know how... Do you ever watch... Do you watch anyone on YouTube like Collider or John Campia would be a good example. Do you watch Campia ever on YouTube?
No, should I be hip to that?
Well, he talks about nerdy stuff. He's from Collider originally. Now, I know you've seen Collider.
Yeah, right? I like the Collider group. Yeah, I didn't know they were kind of parting up now.
Yeah, so he was part of the kind of, I think, the original Collider group. And before that, he was with AMC Theater doing content for AMC Theater. But his stuff's really good. Yeah, absolutely. You should watch him. He's great. Watch this more, like watch us, but then go watch him. But now he's the master of the game. I don't know how he does all this stuff. Like I'm assuming he has a producer, because I'm trying to juggle all these things now that I brought into the game with like the video and the switchboard with all the soundboard and still hosting. But he makes it look so smooth, and I'm thinking he's got to have a producer there. Or he just has the experience. He's been doing it a while, and he makes it look so smooth. So I don't know, but if anybody knows, they're out there, knows, does he have a producer? I know Joe Rogan has a producer, so he's not doing all the stuff himself. He's sitting there at a table, but he's got a guy doing the switchboards and stuff. So I don't know, but he does a similar setup. He's got a studio in his house, and he has, you know, camera and the soundboard and a lot of the same stuff. Does a similar type of show, but only it's good.
Probably got like a dog trained, you know.
He's like a robo producer. All robo version. Man, we did that little mini episode, and we had a nice group of people on, but then we bounced to come back. See, you learn, you live and learn. But we did. Actually, I hear my son. He's trying to try. He just left his room. He's talking through my door right now. I don't know if you all can hear him. But what's funny is that we had a ton of people on, and then we bounced to come back. Oh, they're starting to come back. Okay, I can see the faces now coming back. The little eyeballs. Matt Wilkins said, "Nice Death Star hat." I meant to comment on that, and that is a masterpiece. We're going to talk about the Death Star here in a little bit too. I got something I want to bring up to you about the Death Star.
See, it's not a shaved head. This is just called the Death Star. Except when I'm home, and then it's the Superdome.
Oh, where's my little drum beat for you? Oh man. Well, you get applause. You get applause for that. Let me get you applause. Come on, applause. I know you're there. That was funny. I meant to give you the little drum roll. See, again, I'm like, how do you do all this stuff and then still juggle? Here, okay. This is more appropriate for you right now.
Use foot pedals for your triggers.
I like this. I like the foot pedal idea. I'm going to go with that. Maureen's in again. She said hello. She came back.
Hey!
Join us back on there. Okay, now, reviewing the trailer. And for the review in the trailer, we've got some popcorn sounds. We'll play the popcorn. To go with our... Okay, wait, we're going to talk Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., a retro version of our review in the trailer. Here it is. Here goes.
Something else.
Don't hassle the Hoff. Okay, this is where it gets good. Get ready.
Need
get ready.
These come.
What are they?
Receipts for the new ordnance. W4 forms.
No, thanks.
you see, the Human Resources Department insists that you sign them. Please?
Things have changed, Nick. Bean counters have taken over the world.
Is that a COVID test? Back in 97?
I think it is.
That's our prototype LMD, life model decoy. Reducible in size for easy transport.
It's on Windows 98.
Great year for Windows.
So much better than Windows 95.
Not a bad looking guy, huh?
It's Hasselhoff with no tan.
Program with your memory engrams and reflex tapes. In other words, it not only talks like you, it moves like you.
I don't know whether to congratulate you or drive a stake through its heart. I don't know whether to congratulate you or drive a stake.
Turn it off, kid.
Revenge. That reaction to the gunshots. Did you see this? It was like this. He finally falls down. What was going on there? It was like a little delayed, like, should I fall now? He's looking at the director for... Yeah, she definitely has hassled the Hoff. You need to fall now. Off the ground, David.
It's mine. I can't hear you, Colonel Fury. What? No witty riposte? No clever comebacks? I said revenge is mine. Don't you have anything to say?
I always heard living well's the best revenge.
Got you!
But I just killed you.
No, you just killed my life model decoy. Useful little toy, isn't it?
Take that. Okay, so there you go. That was the 1997 Nick Fury TV movie, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., with David Don't Hassle the Hasselhoff as Nick Fury right there. So that, unfortunately, that didn't get picked up, because I would have loved to have seen that Avengers universe. That
and this movie was based on true story, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my first question is, I haven't watched this, but I'm wondering, did Stan Lee make a cameo in this, as he had done in many other Marvel things in the past?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah. So David Hasselhoff is Nick Fury. Now, here's a question I have for you. I was watching this today, and this is the first thing that came up to me when I was watching this. So they're getting ready to do multiverse in Marvel, in MCU. It's going to be introduced in the new Doctor Strange movie, and then it's going to spill into Spider-Man 3. And there's rumors of them bringing back Tobey Maguire to come back as one of the multiverse Spider-Mans from another scenario. And then also Andrew Garfield coming back to be having three Spider-Mans in there. There's rumors of Jamie Foxx is coming back to be Electro from the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man. So they're loading up. Meanwhile, DC is planning their own multiverse. It's going to be the multiverse war. The battle of the multiverses at the cinema. DC is going to do the Flash movie that's going to introduce their multiverse, and they're going to have Michael Keaton coming back as Batman. There's rumors that they're bringing back some other Batmans also. There's all kinds of rumors of different people that are coming back from past other DCU universes that are going to be united in this one multiverse movie. So the battle of the multiverses is coming, but with the MCU, where they're talking about bringing back Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire and all these other scenarios are being brought up, would it be ridiculous? Okay. So this is the thing. People were speculating about even Nicolas Cage's Superman coming back for the multiverse. And that was from the movie they never made.
Yeah, Kevin Smith wrote that, right?
Yeah, the Kevin Smith scripted. We saw pictures online that came out years ago that were online of what their idea of what Nicolas Cage's Superman was going to look like. And it was very Tim Burton-ish, black and kind of gothy Superman. So that's a ridiculous scenario, but what about this? You know where I'm going with this? David Hasselhoff's Nick Fury back in a multiverse scenario, because he was Nick Fury in this TV multiverse version.
Oh, man. better keep my hat on because you just blew my mind, bro.
Am I ridiculous or am I ridiculous? It's a. Anyway, now you know we did the review and a trailer on that other movie, the Keanu Reeves movie, and you're like, I want to watch this now. What about this one? Do you want to see this first? Do you want to see this Nick Fury TV movie?
I am a little bit curious that acting. Who was that chick?
I don't know.
She was like so over the top.
Yeah, a little bit. just a smudge. Hasselhoff in rare form in this movie is Nick Fury.
Oh man, totally.
That clone, they had a Nick Fury clone. It was kind of like a Nick, like the David Hasselhoff that never did Baywatch, never had a tan.
Nightwatch. Nightwatch.
Never had a tan. It was kind of a much, much wider version of David Hasselhoff. Didn't get the tan thing figured out with that version. Kind of bulked up version of him, too. Looked bulkier.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing, too, is, you know, everyone's seen the memes. Hasselhoff is famously a hairy man. And that clone, I don't think, had the chest hair. Just saying. They're going to have, you know, be anatomically correct and not hassle the Hoff. They got to have the chest hair. He's famous for his chest hair. And you, no comment on that. Okay. So that was a review in the trailer. I want to watch it just because of the nostalgia. I'm interested in what they did with this movie, what could have been. What would have been really cool is you very well know the original Hulk TV series from the
70s, yeah,
which was a really well done show at the time. For the time, it was a really well done show. They did a much more dramatic, melodramatic version of the Hulk. They came back later and they did a TV reunion movie with that version of the, you know, it was the Bill Bixby version.
Lou Ferrigno,
of course, famous as that before the CGI Hulk. They had Lou Ferrigno. When you couldn't, before the days of CGI, you just called Lou, and Lou Ferrigno was your Hulk. So Lou Ferrigno was the Hulk, and it was done, you know, on television. They came back years later. They made a TV movie, like a one or two standalone TV movies. And on one of the TV movies, they introduced Thor, and they had their version.
Oh, yeah. I vaguely remember this.
Yeah, around late 80s. And here's a spoiler alert. They end up killing off the Hulk at the end of the movie, that version of the movie. And it was set up, though, because his girlfriend got pregnant, that they were going to have maybe in the future a sequel, which would have been like the son of the Hulk, or it could have been a She-Hulk, where it could have been the daughter of the Hulk. But his girlfriend was supposed to have their baby when he dies in like a helicopter crash or something. It's been a while since I've seen it. But what if they had taken that version of the MCU and bundled it with this Nick Fury that came out, you know, years later, not that many years later? You could have had David Hasselhoff. You could have had that version of the Hulk, the Lou Ferrigno Hulk. That would have been your MCU right there for TV back in the day.
Bruh. The Captain America TV show, what, in the 70s?
Yes, they had that.
Or early 80s. He had like a motorcycle helmet on.
Oh, yeah. I love that. He had a van. And so the motorcycle would come out of the back of the van. It was like down a ramp or something. So back then, like every show had to have either a badass car or a badass motorcycle. Think about all the shows. You didn't have a badass car, or if you were an action show, you didn't have a badass car or a badass motorcycle, you weren't in business.
Man, that's so right.
And now, I mean, you got shows like Fast, you got the movies like the Fast and Furious. They really ramp it up and they have like, you know, 50 badass cars. So it's not just enough to have one badass car. You got to have multiple badass cars in your badass action movie. So I don't know. But anyway, I'll give this a look sometime. I want to watch it and I'll come back and talk about it some more. Okay. I got one more multiverse scenario. I don't know if anyone's brought this up, but how about this? Okay, gather around, everyone. Lou Ferrigno's Hulk comes back in an MCU scenario? Because maybe in another universe, the Hulk was Lou Ferrigno's Hulk, and it was not CGI Hulk. Kind of like when you make a when you're working in the lab, and you make a they're trying to make a giant rat, and that's going to be like a giant muscular like Hulk of a rat, and the first rat might come out a little smaller, so maybe like the first lab Hulk in one multiverse was just Lou Ferrigno, and then maybe like a later version I don't know maybe a later version was this massive CGI version. So I don't know.
Bro, don't be giving 2020 no ideas with giant rats. Like, 2020 has been 2020 enough. 2020
enough 2020 for a long time. One good thing that's happened in 2020, though, good segue, one really great thing that's happened in 2020 has been the return of The Mandalorian.
Oh, boom, man.
Season 2. We're two episodes into season 2, and first of all, that first episode blew me away, and it really was a space western, more than anything we've ever seen. In my opinion, more than anything I've ever seen in Star Wars, it was space western, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and by the way, if you're continuing on with this, spoilers from here on out on Mandalorian. So,
if
you haven't seen season 2, episodes 1 and 2, then you might get out for a little while and we have the stream completed. Okay, your thoughts initially on the first two episodes, and there's a lot to dive into there already.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, you can definitely tell they're spending more money on it. Like, you know, you could tell it had good budget, you know, the first season, but just the two episodes we've seen so far, like, you couldn't tell me the difference between that and what you see in a theatrically released movie.
Yeah, that last one, well, both of them. Yeah, a lot more special effects and visual effects, which I kind of think they had to do, don't you think? They have to ramp it up a little bit in season 2.
Oh, yeah. You know, a lot of times sequels, you know, will have a little bit more money available, you know. Going back to like the Holy, you know, trilogy, you know, it's like New Hope, you know, and they just made that one like a shoestring. But then with Empire, they had a lot more money to put into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was the thing, because they had never done a lot. This is the first time we had a live action Star Wars TV series, which is amazing after all these years. And George Lucas, he worked on something years ago. He had something in development, I think around 2005. He had something in development with the Battlestar Galactica guys.
Yeah.
They had made a little trailer demo. And it was supposedly going to be taking on the underworld of Star Wars. So how similar could that have been maybe to The Mandalorian? You wonder, and you'll never know for sure. Probably will never know. But unless they do a documentary about it or something. But George Lucas was developing something, and then something happened, and then a few years later he was in talks with Disney, and then the rest is history. So his TV idea never happened, but he apparently was working really hard on the idea and wanted to do something really good. Actually, now here I remember the story, what happened. He was developing it, but he wanted too much money for a TV show. He couldn't find the budget.
Oh, well.
For anybody that would want to do it. This was in the pre-streaming days before.
Yeah. Netflix.
So it was a lot harder to get a network or a cable network to do something on the scale that George Lucas wanted to do that would be able to spend that kind of money. And, you know, it had been a while since he had done anything. He had the prequels out, and those had kind of mixed response from the Star Wars community. And still to this day, although I think they're a lot more appreciated now than they were many years ago. I think in hindsight, a lot of people have said really good things about Revenge of the Sith, at least.
Yeah, I was like the big prequel hater until somebody I used to go out with really got in my head about it. And I was like, okay, I kind of reconsidered. The other thing, it's like I had the latest pass on like the Clone Wars and Rebels. But Clone Wars makes the prequels a lot better.
Yeah.
like those last four episodes of season seven of Clone Wars, mm-hmm. the way it overlaps with Revenge of the Sith, like makes it like gut wrenching.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They really tie those all the TV content together really well with the movies as well. And even since they kind of broke from the expanded universe, which our friend Matt Wilkins, who was on our chat earlier, would have something to say about this. But so far, I think they've done a really good job of tying everything together, like the Clone Wars and the Mandalorian, and what I hear in Rogue One with the early movies and how that was all tied together. I thought that was tied together really well. Solo, that even Solo, the standalone Solo movie, I think somehow we're going to see connections to that at some point in time to some of these TV properties.
Well, it's like I predicted at the beginning of the season. I remember last year when the first episode drops and, you know, the world was totally surprised by Baby Yoda. You know, like, I still think, even though we're two episodes in, I still think there's going to be like some holy shit, you know, like moment coming. Like, part of me thinks it might be, you know, overlap with, you know, some of the original crew. This is 5 years after the BBY, after the Battle of Yavin. And, 5 years after, Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. So it's like, where's Luke, you know?
Yeah.
Like, could we be seeing Luke, you know?
I would imagine starting this, the early stages of starting the Jedi Academy.
Oh, yeah.
Jedi Academy.
You know, I've heard talk of Han Solo, we call it series,
mm-hmm.
you know, or them picking up after the movie.
Yeah.
Like, maybe we might see Han Solo, you know?
Yeah, the young Han Solo.
Like, yeah.
Would be the Han Solo that'd be post Return of the Jedi. I don't know. Yeah. All those are possible scenarios.
Yeah. If we're looking just 5 years after Return of the Jedi, like who's still alive and who might be around.
And who else is another really popular, well-beloved character? General Princess Leia. She's around in that world too. A younger version of her. Well, we saw in the last movie of the nine,
yeah,
the saga, where Leia is finally we see the flashback scene where we get to see Luke training Leia.
Yeah,
and that we know has to be post Return of the Jedi. We don't know how long after Return of the Jedi, but my assumption would be that it's within a couple of years. So, but then we know that Leia quickly decided early on that she didn't want to continue on with her training. So is it now closer to the time, like after that, where she has kind of put her training on hold? And so all that stuff is kind of interesting. You start doing the math on the timeline a little bit to try to dissect and figure out some things, but that's there too. There's Chewbacca. Chewbacca would be one of the easiest characters to have brought in.
Oh, yeah. We
have an actor right now that took over the role from
Yunus, right?
Yeah, Yunus, who took over the role during the last three movies. He kind of transitioned to him as the full-time Chewbacca, and he plays a great Chewbacca. Of course, Peter Mayhew forever is our OG Chewbacca, but he's done a remarkable job. He's done a remarkable job. He's not a shopping center hire a Chewbacca for a day, mm-hmm. fly by night, you know, costume entertainer. He does a really good Chewbacca, and I know they're probably going to want to utilize him some more in the future at Lucasfilm and some other ways.
I feel like someone from the original, you know, the Holy Trilogy will be in there this season. You know, yeah. Like I still think there's some holy shit moment. You know,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. More holy shit moments. And we're going to talk about, we've already had a few little nuggets of fun already in this first two episodes that have been pretty grand. So that first episode, new character is introduced, and we have a feeling that this character is going to come back. This character, they kind of played a little switcheroo on us.
Cobb Vanth?
Yes. He shows up. He's in a Boba Fett. He's in the Boba Fett gear. And so did they have you fooled, or were you like, no, I know that's not Boba Fett?
Yeah, because like his proportions were different. Like this guy was like tall and thin, looked like he was wearing a hoodie under the Beskar or Durastil, whatever it is. He looked taller than
taller and lankier.
Yeah.
And the other, because the other guy is a little bit more brawnier. Built.
Yeah, yeah. Can't remember his name. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Jango Fett and then the grown up Boba Fett. So yeah, you got him. He comes in, he's a little bit slimmer. Your first, you're like, well, maybe there's just not enough food on Tatooine, so maybe he hasn't been eating as much. You know, it's a desert. They hadn't killed the dragon yet, so they didn't have the dragon meat. So he you know, the dragon meat fed that town for, well, actually it fed the sand people. It fed the sand people pretty good for a while.
You know, they're still, bro, Tuscans, man. Sand people just sounds a little racist.
Yeah, you're right. Tuscans. The Tuscans,
bro, like that last episode, just calling, you know, yeah, I know she might be a frog species, but, you know, like we can do better than just frog woman.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure she's got another name, right?
Yeah, but don't speak frog.
And so we got another new character in episode 2, and you bring that up, the frog lady. And this is what she's being called right now, is because that's what we know her as, is the frog lady. The frog lady is introduced, and this brings in a huge controversy in the second episode, and it's been the talk of the past week all over the interwebs, was Baby Yoda. So this woman is trying to protect her eggs. And I know very well, as a dad of a child who fathered a child with a mother, my wife, how important a woman's eggs are to a woman that wants to be a mother. How valuable those are.
Man, I tell you what I thought was really amazing. Just kind of the repeated themes. Okay, so you got Mando and Baby Yoda. You know, that father-son type bond. Mm-hmm. And then you got, you know, Fish Mom, you know, and her eggs.
Yeah.
Then you got that big-ass spider, you know, and, like, all those spider eggs, you know.
There's some, yeah, what?
Yeah, there was some protection, you know, like all these, you know, parental creatures, you know, Mando, Frog Woman, and the spiders. You know, it's like all of them are kind of overlooking their littles. I thought that was interesting.
There's a synchronicity there. You're right. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that was on purpose. So we're looking at this here now, and there's a big controversy. I'm sure you've been following it. Did you, with Baby Yoda, he swallows and eats three of the mother's eggs out of her.
I thought it was at least four, but I might be wrong.
Yeah. Out of that protective dome thing. And were you, okay, first of all, let me ask you this. As you were watching the show, were you shocked, or you're like, nope, that's Baby Yoda being Baby Yoda?
Oh man, I think he's hitting his terrible 50s, you know?
Well, and I had, right after this happened, I had a friend ask me about this and said, you know, he emailed me and asked me, how do you feel about it? And I'm like, you know, it doesn't bother me as much. It did at first. It had a little bit of a little touch of a shock value, but not to the point where I was offended. I think that even in a character like Baby Yoda, you want to show all the sides of the character. And I think that there's Baby Yoda's got his weaknesses. He's flawed just like anyone else. And his weakness is that, you know, he likes to eat some frog.
Well, here's my theory. Okay, Baby Yoda's hungry as fuck, right?
Yeah, he appears
like maybe he's about to have like a growth spurt, because in universe, Yoda didn't start teaching Padawans until he's like 80 or 90, right?
Yeah.
Baby Yoda's 50. Yeah. So somewhere in 30 years, Like, Yoda got some Jedi training, like enough to turn around and start teaching, you know. So it's like, maybe there's a rapid development, you know. Like, maybe Baby Yoda will be talking, you know.
Yeah, which, you know, we know it eventually happened with Yoda and his, the original Yoda, with the species that he is, he was able to talk. So at some point you would think that in his development, he would start talking and say his first words, which we may get to see within this show. While the show is on, we may get to see Yoda, Baby Yoda, have his first words.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely seemed like Baby Yoda, I know it's a child, but Baby Yoda's a lot more fun to say. But yeah, you could tell, like, him and the Mando have, like, bonded, you know, a lot more.
Yeah, you start to see that in their relationship, that's starting to, there's more of a bond there. They've been together now for a while, and there's almost like a little bit of a chemistry, like where they work together as a team more. We're starting to see that a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely.
They know each other's moves, and like they roll with the punches, and they know where one needs to check out and let the other one take over when they need to take over. We start to see a little bit more of that. Of course, remember that first scene, they get us off to a roaring start on that first episode with the big shootout and the lasers doing the whole pretty awesome, pretty cool stuff that they did with that. So we got that. Well, here's my thought. I think they got to show all sides of a character. I think that they're potentially, you show the weaknesses of Baby Yoda and that he can't resist those eggs. There's also been some internet theories, and I know one that I read just the other day that was interesting, was that one person theory was that Baby Yoda communicated with the eggs when he put his hand up and those eggs kind of moved with his hand. And again, this could be the internet just reading more into things than there's really going on there, or they could actually, sometimes the internet does get it right, and sometimes they get it really right. That the theory was that Baby Yoda was communicating with the eggs, and that he swallows the eggs, he's actually protecting the eggs right now using the Force.
Bruh, I saw him eating frogs last season. Like, he wasn't protecting no frog. He was eating a frog.
Yeah. You
know? I mean, it's like, if he enjoyed that little frog, that blue frog, that much, man, you know, frog eggs must be like veal, you know, like... I mean, if a frog is that, I mean, I'm from Louisiana, bro. Like, we like our frog legs, but we don't eat the rest of the frog.
That's some savage stuff there.
Man, when I was a little kid, we'd go out for Cajun food back home, and my sister would get the frog legs. And I would always kind of talk about Kermit in a wheelchair with no legs, you know, and guilt her into giving me her frog legs. Worked every time.
You can definitely appreciate the passion for edible frog.
Exactly. Frog's good eating. Baby Yoda
seems to enjoy. And who knew that Baby Yoda, that his species had some Louisiana in them?
Man, Dagobah, man, that's in Atchafalaya, man. That's in the bayou.
Yeah. Of course, that meme came out this week, that great meme that I think you posted about where Yoda, now we know why he picked Dagobah as his kind of...
He was an apex predator in Dagobah.
It was a prime spot for him. He had, you know, his... He had the whole island to himself. He had the whole planet, the whole island. He had the whole planet to himself. He just kind of helped himself to all the frogs.
Oh, totally.
And then on special occasions like Life Day, for example, he just had a big bullfrog. It was like a feast.
Oh, man, that sounds good.
A big bullfrog for special occasions. Yoda. Anyway, so... yeah, there's some more surprises coming. That episode, the second one, has been called by many as potentially some of the scariest Star Wars ever, kind of horror thriller meets Star Wars with the spiders. It was great.
Yeah, it was a little bit like Alien, man. It just was like, yeah, I didn't really want to watch that right before going to bed. You know?
Well, did you watch it right before going to bed?
No, like I woke up, I think Friday, and watched it before work. And I think I watched it during my lunch break. Wouldn't watch it with friends. And, you know, but yeah, I was like, I think Saturday or Sunday, I was watching it before bed. And I was like, going to sleep, and all I could think of was spiders. Space spiders.
Space spiders. Not just spiders, but space spiders. There was this picture we had here from the. See here, this is a cool Baby Yoda toy. This is the Funko Pop with Baby Yoda and the eggs.
Yeah, part of me thinks like these have to be like a lot more important than just, you know, some people have been trying to call this episode like a filler episode. I think there's going to be so many things in this episode that will come back in like episode 7 or 8 of this season, you know, toward the end, we'll be like, oh, hell. You know,
yeah, yeah. Where there's going to be something like we're like, oh, that connects to something from this, connects to that, in a way that we never had any idea that it would.
No, I tell you, man, our favorite sitcom actor was in this episode.
Yeah, so if that would have been enough, all the stuff with Baby Yoda and the eggs and the space spiders, but no, not quite enough. Our favorite Canadian, our favorite sitcom actor from one of our favorite shows, comedy shows, Kim's Convenience. And you had called it. You had said that I could see him popping up in maybe Mandalorian or something Star Wars. And you had said even maybe this season. And I don't know what crystal ball you were looking in when you talked about this, but Paul Sung Lee shows up in episode 2 as X-Wing.
Man, the craziest thing, a year after our adventure where we, you know, had our encounter with Mark Hamill, like a year to the day, I was at the bar next door during South By at Canada House. And Paul and Simu, who plays Appa and Jung in Kim's Convenience, which I think we've become like, you know, spreading that show like the gospel, you know, best sitcom I've ever seen. You know, it's like Paul's a big Star Wars nerd. And I was telling him how like a year ago, I was telling him the whole story, you know, of the me, you and Don and Jean meeting Mark Hamill. And man, it's like he's listening to every word. No, then I was talking about, man, that day, like I just literally manifested that, like, I called that to existence, meeting Mark Hamill. You know, I'm just like, it made me fairly sure. I'm a Jedi. Like, I use the Force. Like, there's too many planets to align for all that to happen. And I told him the whole story. And I was like, man, you know, since then, I'm like, man, if I can manifest this, like, I'm going to be in a Star Wars one day. That's like my new crazy goal, you know. Always keep a few crazy goals because I find ways to make them happen. You know, move things forward just a little bit when you can. And Paul and I were talking about just, you know, like, he's like, yeah, man, that's a dream of mine too. I was like, man, we were talking like manifesting and like just kind of calling things into existence. And, you know, I think it was like end of the year, I heard a podcast he was on. And I think he worked with Deborah Chow, one of the directors of the episodes. And he was invited to the set. And I was like, when I heard that, I was like, yeah, he's going to be in that show. Like, I'm not sure how, I'm not sure where, but he will be in that show. And yeah, I was like I said, I got up early on Friday and watching it. And then he's an X-Wing pilot, you know. And I was like, I was just happy beyond belief, you know, to see, you know, this guy that we had conversations like this was a dream. You know, this is something like we want to do, you know. And it's like, man, you know, I'm happy for people as I am myself. Like, I'm stoked this happened for this guy. Like, I know, like, he's one of us. You know, he's, like, passionate about Star Wars. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's, like, super cosplayer, you know.
I think, and I think he just has like 9 or 10 Star Wars costumes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that was the whole thing. I know you saw one of the interview. I don't know if you saw the interview he did recently the other day, but he said that when they were talking to him about doing the show, he said, we'll just have them show up already dressed. Really save money on wardrobe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I heard an interview since then that, you know, he didn't wear his own costumes or whatever, but he was like making suggestions on certain latches and like he was like costume. Telling yeah
I'm telling the costume designer
exactly he was like this goes like this.
Well, yeah, he definitely could have a second career as a continuity expert like on a Star Wars set with
costumes
and stuff. But he's also proven that he can have a career, not just as you know, on Kim's Convenience, but as a Star Wars character. And he was very good in that episode. And the role I thought was perfect for him. It wasn't just some like cameo that they just gave him. And it was just sort of random that didn't really fit or just sort of like I was there. Like that sometimes you'll see let's give him a stormtrooper role. And he'll be in a few seconds. No, this was like a role that was written so well for him. It went with him so perfectly and it was just so natural for him.
Oh, his lines were great. The delivery and everything,
yeah.
You know, and I noticed at the end of the episode, he even got a name. I think it's like Carson Teva, Captain Carson Teva.
Okay. I didn't catch
that. Yeah. I was like, bro, when the action figure coming out?
I'm telling you, I'm down with that. You know, I actually know a guy. I know a few guys that do the custom action figure things.
Yeah,
that'd be cool if he got an action figure made, though. Now, if he comes back enough, I think it'll happen. Do you think he'll be back? Do you think we're going to see his character back? Because I know that's been mentioned and asked by some people on the internet.
Well, what was it last season in the Prison Break episode? Dave Filoni, one of the X-Wing pilots?
Well, yeah, and he's the
so other he's back.
He's the other X-Wing pilot in this one with Paul Sung-Lee.
Yeah, so he's maybe he's going to be same squadron or whatever. Like, I'd happy to see him in there again. But yeah, that was really amazing to see him in that role and just such a pivotal role for that episode. Like I said, I've heard some people try to play it off as like a filler episode. I'm like, and there was like nonstop action, you know, just to get to more action, you know.
I mean, hey, if that's a filler episode, I'll take another filler episode and another one.
Yeah, I remember a thing on Twitter, like I DM'd Paul, you know, congratulating him, but I was like, please tell me you have, what was your call sign? You know, like, I think he said at one time they flirted with the idea of calling, you know, being like Red Leader. Which that would have been something because like that would have been Luke's squadron, right? Because he was like Red 5.
Yeah. Wow, that's some cool stuff. Yeah, it was perfectly written role for him. So cool. And of course, another thing about this is he'll tell the story better than me. But on this episode, the show, there's Canadian broadcast that he was on. But he was talking about how Dave Filoni, it turned out, was a fan of Kim's Convenience.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was what helped connect things even easier and faster for him.
I think it was like Dave Filoni's wife got Dave Filoni up on it. And it's like, it's funny because I tell everybody about the show. Like, it is written so well, acted so well, you know. But yeah, to see, you know, somebody telling somebody about the show that we dig, you know, got him into Star Wars, you know. Like, I'm a big believer in the stars aligning, you know, like I'm really happy they aligned for him.
You know, he had to keep that secret. He couldn't even tell like his.
That had to be so hard, man. That had to be so hard.
His fellow cast members from Kim's Convenience didn't even know about it. Like, he couldn't tell then. He went on a trip to L.A. for a week. He was not told. He didn't tell anyone. It was just a business trip to L.A., and I think it was Andrew Fung on his co-star from Kim's Convenience.
Kimchi.
Kimchi. That had said something maybe on Instagram or somewhere. He'd said that, That's what was going on when you went to LA that week. It was like this business trip to LA. So now we know. I think I say he'll be back. I think they might even give him, it was such a hit. I think he might get to do even a little bit more in the future, like come back and do it again. I think he's going to come back again and do that character again.
I want to spin off a whole spin-off series.
I'm all for it. I love it. Yeah, cross them over in another Star Wars series that, you know, we're going to get. So get this. Updates on Star Wars TV real quick. We've got the Obi-Wan Kenobi limited series that's in, you know, that they're doing. There's an all-female Star Wars set in a different timeline TV series in development.
Oh, wow.
Then there's, what else is there? There's another, oh, and then there's the
spin-off. Boba Fett.
There's the Boba Fett and then a spinoff from Rogue One.
Oh, wow.
So, and now there's been talk, you know, Felicity, her last name slips my mind, but played in Rogue One. She said, my contract keeps getting renewed by Lucasfilm. So Felicity Jones, sorry, Felicity.
Yeah,
Jones.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, Felicity Jones. She said, my contract keeps getting renewed. Now, she didn't announce anything official, but she says, I would love to do this character again from Rogue One. If we could figure out a way to bring her back. And some people on the internet have speculated, well, we didn't actually know for sure what happened. We assume they died. Spoiler there. We assume they died in Rogue One, but do we know for sure? So, interesting. I liked your character a lot. I wouldn't mind seeing more of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Capacity. So yeah. So yeah, she said they keep renewing my contract. So I think the door is still open for, they got to be doing that for a reason. They must have something in mind for coming up in the future. So we got there's a Obi-Wan, and then there are people, the internet have been pushing for more of the Solo, a continuation of the Solo. I would like to see them just do either a limited series with a young Solo based like that kind of picks up off of where the movie left off, the Ron Howard movie, or I wouldn't even mind them doing like a couple of more just Solo movies straight to Disney Plus.
Oh yeah.
So either of those, I would take either. The limited series gives you a little bit more opportunity to kind of spread your wings a little bit and develop the characters and kind of breathe with the story a little bit than just doing these little movies where everything's kind of compacted in. But I don't know. We'll see. We got another episode in a few days, third episode coming up, Mandalorian.
Dude, I'm already, man.
I can't imagine what they'll do after those first two episodes. And they were, you know, what's cool is the first episode, second episode, lots of action in both of them. They don't necessarily pick up where the cliffhanger left off, which is fine. I don't expect them to go right off of the cliffhanger. I want a little build up to that. That's great. That gives you something to look forward to later in the season, but both of those episodes still very different from each other in what they did with them.
Oh yeah.
So, but I loved him. I loved him. Okay. So right here, right now on the 131st, we've got Agree or Disagree. And I've got the music for it. Are you ready, Jazz One?
I'm in, bro.
Okay, let's do this. Let's do this on the 131st episode. Live now with a Death Star cap. One cap with Jazz One. Okay, we got to get into it. Number one. And we'll pull this down. Okay, here we go. Agree or disagree, number one. A lot of delayed movies this year. A lot of delayed shit in 2020. A lot of postponed. A lot of cancellations. You know about cancel. We all know we had some cancellations. That sucked. Yeah. 2020. Have you seen the 2020 logo now? That looks like you're flipping out. It's being flipped off.
They took
the zero from the first zero. And it looks like giving the finger. Okay, here goes. Number one, a lot of delays, a lot of postponements. Some of these delayed movies. Now, some of the movies decided that we're going to go straight to streaming. We had, now we found out Coming to America is going to get, it's going to be on Amazon Prime, going to be on Prime Movies in December.
It was wow.
Coming to America Part 2. That was going to be a huge theatrical release, big movie for Eddie Murphy, but now it's going to, it was, but they made a huge lucrative deal with Prime, and supposedly it's actually going to make more money than it was projected to make as a theatrical release because Prime paid so much money to get it. So it was a huge deal.
So anyway, wow.
But some of these other movies have decided to go ahead and wait. Good example is Top Gun Maverick, big budget movie, Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is a purist when it comes to the cinema. He wants his movie to be seen on the big screen. Okay, so they're hold off with movies like that. No Time to Die, the big James Bond movie that's supposed to be the finale for Daniel Craig as James Bond, also delayed. Okay, so many others. Waiting for movie theaters, these movies. They were mega hits if they come out. If 2020 doesn't happen the way it happened and we don't have COVID, you can almost guarantee those two movies are mega hits. No Time to Die, Top Gun Maverick. You got the nostalgia. You got a big budget. You got, okay, so that movie took 2 years, by the way. They spent the 2 years on that movie, Top Gun Maverick, filming it. Okay. Tom Cruise actually learned how to fly a fighter plane for that movie. So it's pretty nuts. That's why the movie took so long, because he took a break during filming and said, you know what? I want to go learn how to fly a fighter plane. I'm going to fly him for real. We're not even going to do stunts. I'm going to fly him for real. He did. He went off and trained for 6 months, came back because he was already a pilot. Okay. So anyway, these movies are huge hits if they come out in 2020 like they're supposed to, and we don't have COVID. Okay. But now they're going to be postponed. Do you think these movies could get postponed far enough down the road to where a movie that was supposed to have been a mega hit could actually end up flopping because it's on the shelf for too long? Do you agree or disagree with that possibility?
I agree on the fact that something can miss its window, you know. Mm-hmm. But I felt like that window was like a few years down the road, you know, instead of a year or two.
So we're still in a safe spot for some of these movies I'm mentioning right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. No, it's like I feel right now, like say if it comes out in 2021.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of people are like, oh shit, we lived through 2020. Now we get 007. You know, now we get, you know, Top Gun. Yeah. And I almost think that's like part of the marketing on this. You know, it's like finally we get it. Now in 5 years, you know, like
different.
You know, like we may not, you know, like people may change. No, we might be changes of people, you know, like we look at some movies from 5-10 years ago. It's like there's some things that make you cringe, you know, from movies from just 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, you know, I don't know, like hopefully they'll go ahead and come out next year, you know.
Yeah, and that's the hope, is that they can all come out in 2021 as they're working on and hoping for. Okay, so number two, and agree or disagree. Do you agree? This is something that came up. So Vince Vaughn has never done sequels. He's never been big on sequels. He's going to do a Wedding Crashers 2. They're in the writing stages right now, but they love the idea. And they're all committed to come back and do a Wedding Crashers 2. He said, you know, I never did sequels. I had all these movies I could have done, probably done sequels too. You know, he made Dodgeball and some of these other movies. He said, I've never been into sequels. I feel like they're a cash grab. They're just chasing success. Do you agree or disagree with Vince Vaughn that pretty much that's what sequels are? Chasing success.
I would say it's more like expanding the universe. You know, it's like if you create a world, if you create a universe that you want to spend some more time in, you know, like I'm all about that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, of course, with Star Wars and yeah, I think there's some movies where, okay, do we really need a Wedding Crashers sequel? You know, right. Like, do we need more Wedding Crashing?
You know? Right. Right. And yeah, so yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's some movies I think that really lend themselves to sequels And there's other movies you wouldn't have ever believed that they could have done a sequel with. They figured it out, and they turned out to be remarkable. I mean, Cobra Kai is a remarkable continuation of that universe, and who would have thought they would have figured something like that out in 2019, a continuation of that universe. But they did quite a good job with it. But I mean, they made all these Home Alone movies. They were doing for like the fourth time he's Home Alone again, and those same crook guys are still trying to break in. it's kind of like, okay, we're just cashing in here. And to a degree, like, I think the second Home Alone movie probably made as much money. It made close to the same amount of money as the first one. So it kind of worked. But then you start to get in like the third or fourth time. It's like, these guys are still breaking into his house. Shouldn't they be like behind bars by now for like trying to harass the kid in his house? Okay. And the parents.
No, I'm looking forward to like the Footloose limited series.
That's the one. When they figure that out, yes. Call Jazz One. He's ready. When they bring Kevin back, their Footloose limited series. Okay, number three. Do you agree? Okay, so we lost the great Alex Trebek. Jeopardy host for, I think, over 30 years. He's been in television for decades. Started in Canada, was a big success in Canada, came into the States, quickly became very successful in the States. Of course, once he got Jeopardy, that was it. He became most known for his years on Jeopardy, which probably goes down as one of the biggest game shows of all time. I would think it's probably in the top three or four.
Man, I auditioned for Jeopardy in, I want to say, like 98, 99. Back in my town, Louisiana, they were doing like auditions. And I went down there, they had a little kind of simplified version of the set, still had a little buzzer and stuff. And it was doing fairly well, answering questions well. And then after your group was asked questions, you were basically interviewed by the casting director, more or less. And they asked me what I did for a living. And at the time, I was working in TV news as a sports videographer. And they wound up passing on me because they felt like it was an unfair advantage that I was used to being around lights and cameras.
Wow.
They were like, if you get somebody who's a librarian, they didn't say this, but the example is like, you get just regular everyday, like a librarian, professor or whatever. Like these people, when you're putting them in front of, studio lights and cameras, they may have some nerves. I'm around this stuff every day. So they were like, that's kind of an unfair advantage. Like, if you watch the show, I think it changed a little bit. You may hear somebody has a video background like every now and then.
Yeah.
But for the longest, it's like they felt like having video experience, kind of gave you an unfair advantage.
Wow. Wow. You could have been the next Ken Jennings.
Man, I wish.
Ken Jennings before Ken Jennings, maybe. And then Ken Jennings would have been the next Jazz One.
Oh, exactly, man. At one TV station I worked when I was on the production side, man, I had to show up at work like 3 a.m. or something crazy like that. And I was taking the syndicated feed off of, off the satellites, for the, for Jeopardy. So I'd be watching it like while I'm doing other stuff, like before the morning news.
Yeah.
So it's like if I was hanging out with anybody and there was a TV around, like I'd literally seen all the questions that morning. So yeah, I was just like, bang, like barely get the question out. I'm like answering it.
Could you have, if you had known in hindsight, could you have like not told him that you were?
It's just like, I wish I would have known, and probably my, guilty self, I believe in too much karma to, go and, fib about it.
Yeah.
It's like, and I could see where they're coming from, but yeah, it would have been interesting,
This is what they should have done. They could have had, they used to do these, I know they did on Wheel of Fortune, where they would have college week. They had all college students and they did a military week. They should have had a TV People in Television Week. And you would have been right on the list. So then it would have been a fair advantage. It equals it back out because they get all people that are used to the bright lights and the cameras, and they're all.
Oh yeah.
It equals it out. In fact, it might have been one of the best Jeopardies ever because you would have had all these people experience. So I don't know, but anyway, Alex Trebek, one of the greats and one of the top game show. I think it's Wheel of Fortune, Price is Right, Jeopardy, and Family Feud for like all time most popular game shows of all time. Okay. So Alex Trebek now, of course, has gone on to the afterlife. Rest in peace, rest in power to Alex Trebek. So now there will be, you know, Jeopardy will continue. It's a dynasty. It's going to continue. They're going just like Price is Right after Bob Barker retired. It's going to continue. It's a brand. It's like Star Wars. It's going to be around forever. Okay. So there's going to be a lot of speculation over the next several weeks and months. Once the kind of you give Alex Trebek, people trying to mourn a little bit of who would be the next host. Now, years ago, probably within about 4 or 5 years, there was already people talking about Alex Trebek retiring. And when he retired, who might take over? And LeVar Burton, reading Rainbow, had said multiple times that he wanted the job. Now, I haven't heard his name come up recently, but maybe now that the job is going to be officially open, there's going to be a lot of talk about it again. Could things circle back around to LeVar Burton? And there were some other people. I know Alex Trebek had even mentioned some people towards the end of his life of people that he would consider like seeing, would like to see be his successor. Do you agree or disagree, though, that LeVar Burton would be the perfect replacement for Alex Trebek as Jeopardy host?
I would say he's not the right host. There was a little bit of snarky with Alex Trebek.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You know, it's like LeVar, like, he's like wholesome, man. It's like Mr. Rogers. It's like, you know, I don't want a snarky LeVar Burton, you know.
Yeah.
Now, my suggestion for who should take over Jeopardy?
Yeah.
Watson.
Oh, who?
The robot. The Jeopardy robot.
You might be onto something there. You heard it here first, folks. Watson.
That's just my idea.
So you might be onto something. I like it. Well, anyway, so there we have it. There's Jazz's recommendation, or his wish is for Watson, the Jeopardy robot. Say snarky. Oh man, who would fit in that role of snarky and kind of fits the, but you also want someone that seems to be a little bit of a like information, you know, person that's, you know, is smart, intelligent.
Tyson, what's the dude's name? Cosmos guy. The new guy.
Yeah. Not Tyson Fury. That's the UFC boxer. That would be a very different Jeopardy. That guy is nuts, by the way. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely. He was the one who broke into song after his fight.
Yes.
Last year.
Yes. Like, that guy is who I want for Jeopardy host. We can't do Alex Trebek again. He was the best ever at what he did. So I think you go in a different direction. You go completely 360. Tyson Fury is your Jeopardy host. And he's song at the end of the shows. If you piss him off, he doesn't get snarky. He just kicks your ass.
Maybe get Matthew McConaughey to replace Trebek.
I like the Matthew McConaughey idea. That plays well. That would be kind of all right.
What I'm saying.
All right. Okay, so there's our close out on agree or disagree. Now for thoughts and advice, we were talking about earlier about delayed movies. Talk about movie theaters being, a lot of movie theaters have been closed, movie theaters that have been open, have not been doing so well. Obviously, it's not a movie theater friendly time right now during a pandemic and during COVID. So and a lot of movies being delayed. So there's just not a lot of new movies for movie theaters to run. So that's been tough for them. So when they just recently now have said that they are seeking out some people from the movie theater industry are seeking out a stimulus to try to bring back movie theaters in 2021, which could be very tough because I don't even know if government has the money for us to keep us going. So then to keep, and we could, that's a whole other thing. We could get into that. We could gripe about that a lot. That's a whole other gripe, but then to have movie money left, to have movie money left for movie theaters to provide them a stimulus, a bailout of sorts for the movie theater industry. I honestly think this movie studios should come up with a bailout for the movie theaters because the movie studios need the movie theaters. That's part of their, you know, their operation. Like Disney, to show a big blockbuster Marvel movie, they rely heavily on the screens. So I think the movie theaters should get together and create a corporate stimulus for the movie theater industry, but that's a whole other rant. My thing is now maybe it's time for movie theaters to get creative and resourceful. You know, like when Detroit, after the motor vehicle industry really crashed and Detroit had, I don't know if you ever see the documentary Detroit, I think it's called Detroit, Detropia, but it's about how Detroit kind of reinvented themselves after the automobile industry crashed and the, you know, things sort of kind of went belly up in Michigan. They started figuring, because they had all these abandoned homes in Detroit, people that fled. So they had to repurpose a lot of the city. They started tearing homes down and putting in community gardens. They took, it became an artist community. A lot of artists were moving there because it was cheap and they could move in and they could do art. And so there was a lot more murals, and a lot more like museums and coffee shops were coming in. So, okay. So here's the thing. Because wherever there's artists, you know, there's going to be coffee shops start coming in. Coffee shops are not too far behind. You know that very well.
Okay. Exactly.
So here's my point. I was looking at some pictures of movie theaters today and I was thinking, how could they do that with movie theaters where it could be the next Detroit? Like after a crash, after a financial crash, they've got a lot of space in these, some of these multiplexes, like stadiums. I think they just need to repurpose some of that space and find ways to make other ways to make money out of the movie theater while the movie theater is still operating, find other ways to make money out of that space. So here's what you do. You take like the stadium seating, put a U-Haul storage set up under the seats, like behind the seats. You go in and you have like a U-Haul storage. You can rent out some of that space under the seats for, you know, storage space. People could come.
Oh,
in,
yeah.
You know, like musicians could come and rent out a little space like under the seats to store their equipment. Okay. So there's U-Haul storage. You got the huge lobbies. Most of the time, those lobbies are empty. Nobody's in the lobby. Put some food trucks in there. Roll some food trucks into the rent. Start renting out square footage of your lobby to some food trucks.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Okay, so we got one more for you. Halloween. Spirit Halloween stores. You're always looking for some motherfucking abandoned stores, some closed down buildings to open up shop. And by the way, I'm starting to even wonder maybe that Spirit Halloween is not even paying for those buildings, their spaces.
They're squatting.
Because they're only there for like a month. So by the time anyone figures it out, they're gone and they've made their month of money for the year. So you open up Spirit Halloween in the lobby every Halloween year and you give them a huge discount, but you make a little bit of revenue off of the, so people could go to the movie. They could get their Halloween costume while they're at the movie. They take the kids to get their Halloween costumes. They knock out two, as the saying goes, you knock out two birds with one stone. Repurposing that space.
Man, that's not a bad idea. Like, there's got to be a paradigm shift in that industry. You know, I mean, yeah, with us having such amazing TVs and video opportunities at home, I think it was like when the pandemic first started, like, I think the first episode we did on video, yeah, or, you know, we discussed, like, will theaters, you know, survive this? I'm not sure. Like, I love the experience of going to a theater, you know, the communal watching experience.
Yeah.
But I'm just not sure if that's where things are going. You know, I mean, if you think about music in a lot of ways, music was something you used to listen to with a lot of people. Now it's earbuds, you know. It feels like a lot of time music is a lot more private in some ways.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, there's still, well, live shows or drive-up shows or whatever. But I don't know. To me, it just, you know, like maybe it's a time, you know, they're going to be a relic one day. No, I hope not. You know, like I don't want to be telling like kids, oh, yeah, I remember, you know, used to go sit in a disgusting seat to see a movie on a big screen, you know.
Sticky floors.
Yeah, exactly.
I think at the very minimum, well, I think they figured out financially big blockbuster like Marvel still benefit from having the theatrical release.
Yeah.
Before it goes to small screen. There's still a huge chunk of revenue that they can't replace. At least it doesn't seem mathematically they're replacing it by going straight to premiere video on demand. So like the big movies, like the big box movies, I think what's going to happen is I think that like these big conglomerates like Netflix, Disney, they are going to wait till the very last possible second because they want to first see, hey, maybe somebody like the government will take care of it first. So we're not going to get involved. We're going to wait it out. And then if that doesn't happen, which I would be surprised if it does, but if that doesn't happen, they could acquire it. I think like Disney could acquire a major theater chain like AMC. I think they've got the capital to do it, or they can get the capital to do it. And they would benefit from having a movie chain where they can cut out the middleman and they can be the distributor and the maker of the product. So they would make more of the money themselves. But I think what they're going to do, if they do that, they're going to wait till the very last possible second. I mean, they're going to wait till it's like at the lowest possible price before they swoop in and try to save it.
I don't know, like kind of counterpoint on that with music, the conversation I've had before was back in the day, distribution was the hurdle, you know, how do you get this CD in people's hands?
Yeah.
You had distributors and, you know, the one-stop shops and those sold to the mom and pop shops. And, you know, with the advent of the internet, we solved the distribution problem, you know, and now you have the paradigm shift was, okay, anybody can listen to, you know, iTunes and later Apple Music, Spotify, you know, so like the distribution problem has been solved. You know, we're still trying to figure out, you know, how to monetize best on it, mm-hmm. but distribution, you know, is not a problem. Podcast too.
Yeah.
But, you know, with movies, you know, like a lot of it was on distribution, you know, like there's only X amount of theaters in the country, X amount of screens, you know. And I think part of what streaming did is the same thing what the internet did with music. You know, it's just like, oh no, to me, it's like you have to give people a why, like with music. Like, okay, anybody can hear you. Why? Why should they give some of their time? You know, why should they listen to you? Mm-hmm. So part of your branding and marketing, part of your selling it is giving people that why, you know? Yeah. So it's like, I feel the same way with movies, you know? Like, I can sit here and watch the Baby Yoda show, you know, saw some great special effects, you know. I'm seeing Star Wars in my living room, you know, 3 weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. You know, why would I go to the theater? Like, you got to sell experiences, you know. And, you know, maybe don't do 15 screens, you know. Maybe do 5 to 10. And have events. If you look at like what we have with the Alamo Draft House, yeah. and how often they do events, you know, and to me, that's a why, you know, why should I watch the movie there instead of streaming it, you know? It's like, I don't know. To me, it's not, I mean, that's one thing I've struggled with as a musician myself, you know, like, you know, giving people that why. So it's like, I feel like the film industry is going to have to do the same thing.
Yeah. Cause you'll go to the theater if there's a Q&A afterwards from the cast.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Directors there for a meet and greet afterwards, you know, something like that. Celebrity chef is going to be doing the menu at the Alamo Draft House that week. Things like that. So yeah, if they do a sequel to Sylvester Stallone's Cliffhanger, you have to have a rock climbing wall in that lobby.
Exactly. You know, it's like you got to turn movies into events, you know, like why give people a why, you know? And I mean, I think that's the hurdle that they have to cross now, because like, man, we're used to watching movies at home, you know, give me a why. Why should I go to your venue? You know, yeah. It's got to be more than just throwing a movie on a screen.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think that there'll be some reinvention and it'll be good. It'll be good. It'll be a fresh kind of fresh new coat of paint on the whole experience. Okay. Jazz One.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Man, it's always a pleasure, man.
Always. Hey, we have good synergy.
Oh, yeah.
That's what's cool about this instant. It's like, you know, the difference between making a movie or doing live theater. You get that kind of the instant reaction from the audience, whether you hear crickets or whether you get some response. So getting people's response in real time is something very new. But that's some of the cool stuff that you get was like someone saying, hey, we validated our... We thought we had good synergy, but someone else thought we had good synergy too. Okay, everyone. Jazz One, thank you. You have a good rest of your week. Mandalorian thank on you. Friday, episode 3, season 2. Everyone out there, have a good day, hour, second, millisecond. Good night. We're out.
All right, all right.
Thunder Pop is a Hit the Bricks production.